This is the Joy of Gaming. Welcome to the Joy of Gaming podcast special edition episode. It's been a while since we've done one of these, huh, Jordan?
It has. We haven't had a lot that has seemed to warrant it. The last thing was an interview, but
with the creators of Indie Game the Movie.
Yes, which was awesome.
Very, very legit. That's one of our most highly downloaded episodes, if not the most highly. It's between that and the Smithsonian Battle Royale we had.
Well, that was just arguments.
It was
the whole
cool,
hour and a half. We were all arguing.
It was
about
so
stuff.
Cool though. And then I put my foot in my mouth pretty hard. And then he was like, "I'm close personal friends with the curator," and I felt really bad.
Which we should mention, Tim is not here today.
Yeah, he's not.
He hasn't played 999 or Virtue's Last Reward. Which...
Yeah, in fact, we didn't even say that yet. That's what we're going to be talking about. And I guess even more important than saying all of that is, I'll get to that in a second. We're going to be talking about 999 and Virtue's Last Reward.
Yeah.
These are the games by, what's his name?
They're developed by Chunsoft, and while they're, a lot of people work on games, the main author of the series is Kotaro Uchikoshi.
That sounds all right. That sounds pretty legit. No, that sounded pretty legit. I'm pretty impressed with your pronunciation there, bud. But yeah, so these games are like huge, huge cult hits at this point. And Virtue's Last 999 came out, the end of 2010?
Yeah, 2 years ago, and kind of blew Axis's expectations. Axis, if you know, they do a lot of those Japanese games that really don't have a market here, but they'll run them anyway.
Which is
limited
really
runs.
Cool. You got to give them mad respect for that.
Yeah, they really love the games that come out of there. But this one kind of blew everything out of the water for them. It sold out. It continues to sell out. Now, these aren't big, big runs like you'll get for Call of Duty, but... As far as a Japanese visual novel game, it's been selling crazy since it was released 2 years ago.
And I guess for people that don't know, if you're listening to this, we're hoping you do know. But for those of you who don't know, the visual novel game is maybe the closest contemporary that we have in the U.S. would be maybe like Phoenix Wright. It's
been
the closest thing we have to it. A lot of them in Japan are like romance-based and relationship-based. I was actually looking for more after this game. I was like, ooh, I want more, looking on the iOS store and stuff.
There's
and
a dearth. There are not many of them.
And a lot of them are even on the American iOS store in Japanese, I guess appealing to that Japanese market. But anyway, the most important thing for us to say about this, I think, is that this is part one of what we're calling a spoiler cast, which is oh my God, my phone's ringing. Okay. spoiler cast, which is this new series that we're going to be starting to do every time a game warrants it. And that is when, a game comes out and we play it and we want to talk about everything. All the details, just get it out there. I think, Jordan, you were super thrilled when you, found out that I got the game and was playing it also.
Yeah.
It's the kind of game you want to talk to someone about.
Well, yeah, it is one of those games. And, I think we noticed there wasn't a lot of discussion about this particular game going on online.
Yeah.
There were mentions about it getting good reviews, but in terms of major websites and their podcasts... There just wasn't a lot of talking about it. And I think it deserves an episode about it.
Yeah. In fact, I felt kind of a little bit, aside from, obviously Jordan turned me onto the series originally a couple years ago. But aside from being able to talk about it with him and, a couple sundry assorted, mentions on the internet, you kind of feel alone, knowing about this amazing game. And it's like you want to tell the world about it. But I've been going into GameStop. This happened 3 times. I've gone into GameStop and I've been like, "What are you playing?" to the guy behind the counter. I always do that. And then he tells me he's playing Halo or God knows what,
Yeah.
God probably does know what, because it's probably Halo or Call of Duty, But every time, I'm 0-for-3 on them knowing what Virtue's Last Reward is in GameStop, which is like the only retailer you can even buy it at, in my understanding.
Yeah, I mean, it sold, Virtue's Last Reward, much like the first game, was pretty much, if you didn't pre-order it, you weren't getting a copy the day it came out, because it was... sold out pretty much right out the gate. In fact, when I went to get my copy, I had pre-ordered it, but I had to get the display case version because all the other versions were gone, which was a little questionable on GameStop's part, but whatever.
I see. Is that what happened?
Yeah.
I see.
It was still new.
Hey,
anyway.
Whatever. You'll take it when the game is this good. But anyway, so back to the point. This is going to be called a spoiler cast, and we may be doing these in the future as well. When a game has a great story... and a lot of intricacies and interesting stuff to talk about, and we would really love to talk about it. I know that when 999 came out and I felt sort of like there was no one to talk about it with, I would have loved to have heard a couple people like us who are obsessed with it, you know, talking about, you know, the ins and outs of the game and you know, what they thought of it, sort of like a, you know, a discussion.
Yeah, so, I mean, this is the kind of thing where, you know, we don't do a lot of straight-up reviews on the show, usually, right, because, for the most part, we each, I'm sure you know if you listen to the show, is that we don't all have the exact same gaming interests, and we aren't...
Which is kind of the point, too.
Yeah, that's kind of the point, but we're also not the most wealthy, so, like, all three of us getting a new game at the same time is kind of difficult. We do what we're playing, but for this one, it felt like we wanted to spoil it. So definitely, if you haven't played the games, go play them.
Right.
Is our first thing.
And both of them, too. There was much talk about how this game is like a spiritual successor to 999 and not actually a sequel. That is not true.
Yeah, it starts off without any clear connections, but even then, it's pretty quick to start making all these ties.
And by the end, it's inextricable.
Yeah.
It's a sequel. It has this little Zero Escape 2 nomenclature on the top of the box now. So it's like, this is like a series officially now.
And the most recent reprint of 999 has Zero Escape Volume 1 on it as well.
Does it?
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. Okay, that's great. But anyway, so just to be clear, this is a complete spoiler cast. This is for people who have played this game. And I would say, or people who don't care about having it spoiled, but I don't want that to happen. Play this game. Do not listen unless you have played it and unless you, you know... Yeah, unless you've played 999 and Virtue's Last Reward, I wouldn't go anywhere near this episode. Skip to the next one.
Or, yeah, I mean, we're going to start with 999. So if you played that one and want to hear a little, particularly a refresher course, I think that's one of our main goals, talking about 999.
Sort of get on the same page so we can move into Virtue's, yeah.
Because I had to look up the plot a little. Not that I remembered the big things.
But who's related to who and how, these intricacies and... You know, who's sister and brother and yeah.
Yeah. And I think there's two big things that make Virtue's Last Reward a sequel and not a spiritual successor. The first of them is pretty obvious early on in the game, and the next one comes later, but we'll get to that when we get to that game. But first, I guess we should just go right into 999.
Yeah, I think that sounds good. Why don't you give us sort of a little rundown summary of the game, and I'll chime in where necessary.
All right, so 999, just like Virtue's Last Reward.
What's it really called?
9 hours, 9 persons, 9 doors.
Okay.
It's a visual novel game, came out for the DS at the end of 2010. I call it my best DS game of all time because I absolutely love it. And what it is, it's about this young man named Junpei who comes home from class one day and a mysterious stranger in a gas mask knocks him out. And when he wakes up, he's in an ocean liner locked in the cabin. The ship's sinking and he has to escape from this first room. And when he does, he runs into 8 other individuals. All of whom have also been kidnapped, or so it would seem, and they have to take part in this thing called the Nonary Game, which is, of course, where these 9 individuals each have a numbered bracelet 1 through 9, and there are these different numbered doors, and in order to go through those doors, their watches have to add up in a certain way so that they can access it. So the digital route, which is all of the numbers added together, and then those numbers added together. So if they wanted to go through the number 6 door, they could send... 3, 9, and 6 through that door, and it would add up to 15, and then 15, 1 plus 5 is 6. And so that's the digital root of it.
Which is weird, but
it's a weird
it is
system.
What it is, yeah.
The game, of course, it had a nice calculator that would let you figure stuff like that out.
Is that how it worked?
Well, it wasn't just that.
They figured it out for you,
but they also had a calculator and you could do things in the game with it. It had a small tool set. But basically, a mysterious man named Zero had kidnapped them all. And among the
man in quotes,
yes. And they had to work together to get out of this ship. However, people start dying pretty early on and it becomes clear that escape might not be that easy because they have to find the number 9 door, but not everyone can really go through that door. And so among the people on the ship are the, protagonist Junpei's childhood friend, named, well, in the game, she's called June because they all use these sort of hidden names for a while.
Well, a big part of both 999 and Virtues is that nobody trusts everybody else. That's big. So everybody comes up with these code names to sort of shield their true identities. And it's also sort of a mechanism for the author of the games to allow there to be reveals about who the people really are as the game progresses.
Yes, but so the 9 individuals all come together. And so number 6 is June, his childhood friend. Whose real name is Akane.
And she seems kind of frail, but really sweet. And, you know, she's like the ultimate, like, cute Japanese anime sort of chick, I guess, with, like, brown hair and totally innocent girl next door type.
Yeah, and Some other notable characters. Ace is number one. He's an older gentleman who seems kind of, he's a big guy, but he seems nice. And that,
yeah, he seems affable.
Then there's Snake, who's blind and is the brother of another member of the game, which is number four, Clover.
Correct.
Who's pink-haired and is in the sequel.
Right, and probably will be in the next one as well.
Yeah. And so they're in there. And just all the characters have their own personalities, and you get to know them over the course of the game. And you start to find out what the Nonary game's all about, because...
Oh, by the way, Nonary game, Nonary means nine.
Yeah.
So it's a game involving nines, basically.
Yeah.
And there are nine people, there are nine doors. Anyway, you get it.
But so each time you come to these different numbered doors, you have to figure out how everyone's going to go through the doors. And on the other side of those rooms are puzzles.
And this is interesting because this game really, we say it's a visual novel, but it really combines two genres, the visual novel and the escape room genre.
Yeah. Now, it is very visual novel in the fact that you're going to be reading text for pretty much an hour to an hour and a half between those rooms. Usually.
Sure.
But yeah, the puzzle rooms are just, I mean, they're the kind of escape the room puzzles you might find in a flash game online. But they're really well done.
Oh, they're so good, especially in the sequel. But, yeah.
Yeah, they're highly thematic. They fit with the ship and with the stuff you're finding.
And you find clues, and then those tie into the novel itself. It's brilliant.
And so, of course, as you go through the game, and we're not going into super detail because, again, you should have played it. You find out that Zero, or what had happened in the past was a previous Nonary game had gone on.
Yeah, this is not the first Nonary game you find out, and there was one 9 years earlier.
Yes, and what happened in that game was this pharmaceutical company had taken a bunch of kids and was starting to put them into this experiment called the Nonary game to get them.
They were pairs of kids.
Yeah, there were actually two Nonary games going on at the same time. One in a fake location, one in a ship that was actually sinking, because what they were trying to figure out was this thing called morphogenetic fields, which is where people can access this sort of memory base that
exists.
It's
like a collective consciousness.
Yeah, it sort of exists on a higher dimension, where if you're in the same situation as someone who you're close to and who you can connect with, then you'll be able to access their memories and figure out how to solve things that they've solved.
So they'd find these pairs of kids that were like either brother and sister or very close for some reason, and then split them apart. And put them in two separate locations and then put them in the exact same situation, like solve this puzzle or try to escape this sinking ship. And because they're both in the same situation, the one who like solves the puzzle first would like theoretically send that information to the person in the other situation, and then they'd get the info and be able to escape.
And of course, an important part of that was danger had to be a part of it, life-threatening.
Right. Supposedly, that brings out the ability to access this morphogenic field.
Yes, which ended up leading to the fact that a bunch of those kids had died in the past. But what you end up finding out is because you can pick your own path in this game, which ends up being very important because you go through the game once, and you can't get the true ending at first. You have to go to this specific path where you get the secondary ending, which lets you figure out this lock code that you don't really know what to do anything about.
Right.
But then when you play through the game again and get to the part where the true ending would normally block you off, if you've played through to where you know the code, you remember it and can get through to the actual ending of the game, where you find out that the person who's Zero is June.
Yeah, your childhood friend.
Yeah, Akane, which is probably what we should call
her. Name is Akane Kurashiki, and she seems like the most innocent. This reveal is brutal. Because for me, I know you didn't feel that betrayed, Jordan, but to me, betrayal, like after we discussed it, I'd say I agree with you that it's not the right word because she had reasons for doing it. But at the same time, when you find out that this Zero character, who's been demonized throughout the game, like he is evil, he's kidnapped you, he's putting you in these death situations. And don't forget to mention that throughout the game, you're dying a lot, and your friends are dying a lot in different paths. Because there's, seven endings?
There's seven endings, most of which end with you getting a knife or a bomb or some bad ending.
Killed, right. And so, after you see your friends die a couple times, you start hating Zero. And then to find out it's your childhood friend. And then you find out that she's got reasons for it,
which the big reason is the morphogenetic fields don't just work across space, they work across time. And the way it worked was June was a part of that original experiment, and she died. However, what actually happened was she was able to access the morphogenetic field to the future where Junpei, her childhood friend, was also taking part in a Nonary game, and where he solved the puzzle and was able to tell her how to get out of the situation in the past. But in order for that Nonary game to happen, she had to escape and then set that game up 9 years later so that he could be a part of it and learn the information she would need to.
Actually, now I'm curious. Now I'm even a little confused. How did she access the information the first time in order to escape before she was able to escape to set the Nonary game up?
It's sort of like a chicken and the egg thing. Because throughout the game...
Well, no, but the past comes before the future, so we know what comes first.
Well, the past comes before the future, but again, like the second game sort of goes into further, sometimes the future can affect the past, which is sort of wonky, but it's kind of the issue of the whole morphogenetic field thing is supposed to exist on a higher plane of existence.
Where time is not
an issue. Yeah, it's not linear. And
okay, all right, you're right, it is a little wonky.
But the other big part of the reveal, and this is the part of the reveal that I liked, or I thought was way more awesome, is that it's a DS game. And so throughout the whole time, you're playing stuff on the, you'll be doing stuff on the top screen. All the other characters will be talking, and then you'll see internal narration, or you'll see a third person monologue, you know, describing what's happening on the bottom screen, which is also where you go into the puzzles. And you don't think anything of it. You just think, okay, it's a DS game. They're putting all the text on the bottom screen. But what it actually is the bottom screen is set in the past where Akane is accessing that morphogenetic field. And she's exploring the futures and seeing how things have to go in order for Junpei to survive, because at some of the bad endings, the things will start to go wrong and she'll suddenly disappear because she no longer exists.
Yeah. And before that happens, she gets really hot and like starts to faint. And the reason she gets hot, that was so clever. The reason she gets hot is because her death, if she doesn't escape in the past, is in an incineration room.
Yeah.
So clever. So clever. And clever is really the key word in these games.
Clever is the key word. And so that's the first game where you're finding all the... And the way it ends is, after you rescue her by completing this puzzle, she disappears. Another contestant named Santa, who's actually her brother.
It's her brother, yeah.
They both disappear, and all the survivors, because some of the other contestants were bad guys. Ace, for example, was the president of the pharmaceutical company.
Cradle.
And there were some other...
Who actually started off this whole, you know, disgusting, if you want to call it that, series of events in the first place.
Yeah.
And then the ninth man who dies right in the beginning of the game was a pharmaceutical rep employee or whatever for that company.
So all this happens, and at the very end of the game, you and a bunch of the people, you drive off into the sunset chasing after them, because you're not actually on a ship, they're in the middle of a desert. And so they go off to chase her, and the very last scene of the game is of an Egyptian-looking woman wearing very little clothing hitchhiking. Which ties into this whole thing about all ice, which is a concept that comes up.
Or maybe not, as we'll find out in Virtue's Last Reward. It's weird. Yeah, throughout the game, this is a really odd thing about 999, is that like throughout that game, you know, he was throwing in these little hints about, you know, like throughout all these games, like there's little papers people will pick up, like in files and in folders and stuff. And some of them will have to do with escaping the room, and some of them will just be like relevant or irrelevant information about other stuff that fills out the sort of world.
And that's one of the interesting things about the game, is that there's all these hints to morphogenetic fields and this idea of this higher consciousness throughout the game. But a lot of the times it's tied into the puzzle room, and there's so many scientific concepts explored in the game you aren't immediately going to this one big thing they're talking about all the time.
Right, because they'll talk about other things too. Right, exactly. They'll talk about like 10 different theories, and the second game is even more crazy like that. Like they talk about all these different theories, the Chinese room, Schrodinger's cat, all this different stuff. And so then the one thing, you know, golems or whatever, you know what I mean, all kinds of certain things that end up being literally integral. It's all related. But the really integral stuff, you wouldn't know it from the not so integral stuff. And that's one of the plethora of incredibleness about this game. Anyway.
So, but yeah, 999 was an awesome game.
Oh, wait, we didn't finish Alice.
Oh, yeah, Alice, right. So she's.
So there's this Egyptian, there's this references to this Ice Nine, which is this substance that can, like, supposedly there's this Egyptian goddess who her blood was really ice, or this substance called Ice Nine. And so therefore she can't get below a certain temperature, she'll die or something.
Yeah, it's something to do with her blood being at a different freezing point. And it's an odd concept.
It
There's
really
another
is.
Character that sort of looks like Alice in the game, in the first game
Lotus. Yeah, Lotus, yeah. And you wonder, is it maybe her? And then you see the real Alice, or a girl named Alice at least, hitchhiking on the road at the end. And then that's all you see, and that brings us into Virtue.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
But to kind of wrap up, again, if it seems like we're being brief with 999, that's because, again, we haven't played it for 2 years, and to play the whole game again would be a bit of a slog. Because
I remember it pretty damn well.
No, I do too. Yeah. I'm just saying, you know, the specific characters and being able to discuss every little intricacy of it, is that's not why we're here. We're here to talk about the new game, but we wanted to kind of
It'll
give the
come
brief.
Up though.
Yeah, it's going to come up. Because,
a lot.
Again, the sequel is not a standalone.
No,
it's a sequel.
It is a sequel. By the end, it's like such a sequel, it's ridiculous.
So that's 999. The main character wants to find this girl because he wants to kind of question her about what's happened. And, he's
kind of in love with her.
Yeah.
So Junpei is sort of chasing Akane, and that's sort of how it ends.
Yeah, and so the game, and again, it's set in 2027, I believe.
I believe so, yeah.
Because the sequel picks up.
In 2028.
So Virtue's Last Reward just came out last month. It's both for the Vita and the DS, or the 3DS, which means the whole two-screen trick was out the window. They couldn't do that again with the Vita only having one. Though they do something pretty tricky again.
And we'll talk about that. Actually, they do a couple things. They're kind of
They do a lot of tricky things. If 999 had, you know, a lot of twists and surprises, Virtue's Last Reward is just absolutely exploding with things.
It's jam packed. And the thing about it is, like, what you said to me, Jordan, when you finished it. Jordan finished about a week and a half, 2 weeks before I did. And what you said about it was that there's so many disparate elements. And like, if you think that 999 is like complex and like ties all kinds of complex concepts together into one, you know, cohesive narrative, this game like does it, but like, you know, exponentially. Like there's more of everything to the tune of, you know, literally, you know how an exponential curve works. I mean, you know, it's, you know what I mean? It just gets, it's so much. It's like your brain's going to explode by the end.
I mean, the big thing to point out is 999 is maybe a 12 to 15 hour game with seven endings. Virtue's Last Reward took me 33 hours.
And me over 40.
And
I want to listen to all the voice work.
I'm a fast reader, so I would listen to the voice work for a little bit, and then sometimes I'd be skipping. But that was, again, a part of the storytelling where I just wanted to know.
Yeah.
Because the ending, in particular, is a very long stretch of story, and I was just digging it. But anyway, we'll get to the ending. But this game's so long. It's so chock full of stuff. The characters, honestly, I feel like they have more. Each character has more of a side plot than they did in, say, the first game, where certain characters.
It was all related, pretty much, in that, except maybe Lotus. No, Lotus's kids were in the original, weren't they?
Yeah.
Everybody there had a connection to that original game.
Yeah, and I mean, people here have a connection, but I think the thing is, there wasn't a character that dies right away in 999, the number 9 man dies. But that's mainly because the number 9 guy could go through any door he wanted, because his number would always keep the digital route the same. But that's just a little thing.
Right.
Actually,
I think they started the same way. I mean, a person's dead right at the beginning. I think that's very
not necessarily.
I think it's very similar in that way.
No, but it's not a player. It's not a player is the point I'm making. It's not one of the 9 contenders.
It actually is, though.
Not really. Okay. Anyway.
I know. All right.
But again, there's not necessarily a person dead if you start on a certain path, because I started on the far right path and there wasn't anyone dead.
Okay, right.
But that's kind of the point. This game is much bigger. It branches much, much more frequently.
Yeah.
And that's because this time the Nonary game is a little different and it facilitates a lot more choice.
And another thing about it, too, is that this game, as you go through the game, it starts talking about these concepts like a disease, like infectious disease called Radical 6, like the concept of Schrodinger's cat, like this Free the Soul, this religious group, this guy Brother who runs it, this group of people called the Myrmidons, who are the assassins of that group, and they're like clones of Brother's son, or was it son?
Yeah, something like that. The idea of golems.
Yeah, these robots that have ABT, artificial biological tissue, that makes them look human. So, you know, of course, there's a possibility that one of the people playing the game isn't human or more.
And so, well, anyway.
But it's just that what I'm saying is the world building is on an epic scale.
It is. And it really blows out the universe in terms of what content is. So let's start at the very beginning. The game opens December 25th, 2028, Christmas morning. A young college student, Sigma, is getting done with some paperwork. He's about to head home when his car gets gassed. And who should be out the back window but a mysterious gas-masked figure who looks pretty much exactly like Zero.
Right.
And so he wakes up, this time not in a sinking cruise liner, but in an elevator with another girl. Not another girl, he's a guy. But with a girl named Fi, who knows who he is for some reason. Seems to have inordinately strong jumping and
she can
abilities.
Jump. Once they escape the elevator room, she literally jumps through like the ceiling, like there's a hatch that opens on the top, and she like jumps and it looks like she's flying out the ceiling basically.
Yeah.
So immediately, you know, you think, okay, what's up with her? Is she, you know, superhuman strength? And you start wondering right away, is this game, like, how far is he going to take it? And that's what's cool about it. Is it like, it's like, okay. Because, you know, for me, a sci-fi world is only as good as it adheres to its own rules, you know? And so it's like, or a sci-fi movie too, you know? Because obviously it's sci-fi, so it starts to use its imagination on what's true in this future world or this alternate world. However, everything has to make sense within the context of that. And how well it does that and how well it convinces me that this world could exist is a big sign of its quality. And what I was wondering at this point is, okay, the first game kept it, you know, they went to the morphogenic field zone and the Ice Nine thing a little bit, but they didn't go too far into the realm of, like, the supernatural or the crazy.
Well,
however, you don't know if in this one he's going to go to, like, okay, now they got hit by nuclear whatever power, now they're superhumans. I didn't know at the beginning how far or where he would go with what.
But that's kind of the first big point to me, that this was a sequel and that you had to have played the first game. Because the first game was subtly setting up scientific facts throughout.
Yeah.
So that the big reveal of the morphogenetic fields being a real thing,
right,
could have some resonance.
And so it didn't sound like, oh my God, this is a jump the shark moment. Or,
yeah,
or Deus Ex Machina, where something just magically, you know, you throw something in there that just makes it make sense at the end that was never referred to. It's kind of like a detective story where it's like the butler did it and you never met the butler.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
There are parts like that in this game. A lot of the new information is set up that way in this game.
And at first it took me a little while. When I heard about Radical Six the first time, I was like, that doesn't sound real. And then when I heard about Free the Soul, I was like, that sounds phony. And then an hour or two later, the story is so good at filling in the details richly that all of a sudden I started taking it for granted that Radical Six existed, taking it for granted that Free the Soul was this real organization.
But
you know what I mean? When you heard Radical Six, weren't
you
thinking,
ooh, I don't know, I was okay with it, but I think that was the thing about this game. It was basing so much of its science on things set up previously.
Yeah.
Like morphogenetic fields right out the gate. They're talking about not just morphogenetic fields, but the people who can use them are called espers.
That's not till late.
Well, that's not till late. Well, I don't know.
I don't hear the word esper. I didn't hear the word esper until 20 hours in.
Maybe it was just the path I was on.
Maybe.
But the point is, the stuff comes up a lot sooner, and it's less well explained in this game because it expects you to know from the first game, I honestly think, because it doesn't explain the science behind morphogenetic fields as thoroughly, because it's like, no, well, we already did that.
But they do some recapping later.
But
only to the extent like we did at the beginning of this podcast, where it's like enough to where it's interesting, but if you haven't played it, you're still going to be like, what?
Anyway, so Sigma and Phi get out of the elevator, and they have already met him a little bit, but they meet this AI computer robot bunny, or not robot bunny, but AI computer bunny.
Zero the Third,
who's fucking hysterical.
Yeah, supposedly Japanese voices were played by this guy Tarako, but somebody out there is going to know better than me, but whoever did the American voice acting, first of all, the voice acting in this game is phenomenal from front to back, top notch, top talent, and the quantity of voice acting in this game is astronomical. And how does it fit on those little cards? I mean, it's ridiculous. There's so much voice content in this game, it is crazy.
I think the thing that really I liked about it so much was the fact that you had all of this voice work and character work, but again, none of them sounded annoying. Like at first I was listening to Zero the Third going, this could get old really fast with his rabbit puns.
Yeah, like he'd say, you're out of options instead of options.
Yeah, stuff like that.
Yeah, or but everybody get over here.
He just stayed funny because he was so light about the fact that they were all going to die.
Yeah,
and his intonations would change and get comical or high, low.
Yeah, he was an AI, or he or she, and so probably he. And what's cool about that is that, like, he's got no human emotions, really. You know what I mean? Like, so he was disconnected. So he could talk about that stuff completely disaffected by it, which is cool. So you have, like, this guy or this AI who's, like, only a conduit to somebody else. So it's like you don't hate him. So the person giving you the rules, I think it was very clever of them to do this. So the person that's giving you the rules of this sort of detestable game that could lead to your death is not a detestable creature because they're only like a pawn.
Yeah, and I think it made sense because in the first game, Zero left a bunch of notes everywhere. And there are still notes in this one, but to have a fully voiced game and not have some kind of force that you could feel threatening the characters would be a bit off. I like the addition of that.
It was clever. And it, like you said, the voice work was great, and especially Zero the Third, because he switched, I don't know, whoever did the, like I said, the American voice work, they switched accents. They would do imitations. They, like, there'd be a Southern voice, there'd be a ghetto voice, there'd be a, you know, a British voice, there'd be like an Australian voice, like, all right then. I mean, it was like, it ran the gamut, and it was so clever and so interesting, and it really kept you compelled for a lot of what could be, you know, dry info.
Yeah, and I think the characters or that voice actually definitely gave conviction to each performance. And so again, going back to the story, they're part of a new nonary game. This one is a little different, though. There's 9 people again, and we're going to get into the characters with a little more depth because each of them has a really good plot. That, I mean, there's maybe 1 or 2 that are not as strong as the others, sure. But I think they tie in pretty well overall. But there are 9 individuals, and they have to play the nonary game again. But this time, there aren't number doors, and the numbers on the watches don't have to add up in a certain way. There are chromatic doors, which are colored a certain way. And the numbers on the watch don't matter as much as the color on the watch.
And whether you're a pair or a solo. So for every door, chromatic door, there are always 3 at every juncture. And 3 people have to go through every one, period. And it has to be 1 pair and 1 solo. And their colors, when combined, have to equal out the color of that said door.
And there's ways that it kind of like 3 of the same color make a different color across the chart. We won't go over
right.
The
point is there are usually 3 options for who you can go with which door. Usually, sometimes there's only 1.
And so you go through these doors, and what's really cool about it is after the first set of 3 doors, you go through doors again, and it's the same doors, but they have it set up so that there's different puzzle rooms depending on which path you're going through, and it's logically explained how that happens.
I don't know. I mean, it sort of is, I guess. Oh yes, it is. Yeah, you're right. By the end, when you realize why they're doing these changes, you're right.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that, you know, no matter which path you go on, like you're going to go through, like there's, let's say at the second juncture, there's a first juncture where you pick between 3 doors. And then at the second juncture, this is what, I guess they're the complementary doors.
Yeah.
Those were.
It's where.
And at that point.
They're the same 3 doors in each timeline that you've picked.
Right.
But they each lead to a different puzzle room.
Right. Right. And the way that they do that is they still lead to the same room, and then you pull a latch, and depending on which path you had taken, it takes you to one of 3 other doors, which lead you to a different puzzle room. So literally every one of these 20 paths, pretty much, except for a couple.
Yeah, I think there's 16 total puzzle rooms.
There are, yeah. I counted.
Which is a fairly chunky amount, considering there weren't
They're great,
the first
too. I mean, some of them were less great, but the majority of the puzzle rooms to me, like, and it took me a little while. The first 2 or 3, I wasn't having as much fun until at, like, the lounge and stuff, mixing drinks. I was like, it's kind of a pain. But once I got like into the flow of the puzzle rooms and how they work, I could really solve them every time, but they were still challenging.
Yeah.
So what they say is easy to learn, hard to master, very much so.
And I think, you know what, now that we're on the topic, because the gameplay is one thing, but I think the story is kind of the meat of what we're going to talk about. Why don't we talk about the puzzle rooms a little bit?
Sure, yeah, sure.
I think I loved the puzzle rooms in this because, much like the first game, but to another level, they were so thematic.
I know.
Like, each of the rooms, if you were in a garden, you were going to be digging stuff and searching through plant life.
Oh,
and
that's
working
what you
with
mean by
river.
Thematic. That's what you mean by thematic. Like where they are affects the way you solve them.
Yeah. And so stuff like that, when you're in the pantry, you have to balance diets and use a meal chart to figure stuff out.
Right.
It's just cool things like that where, like, all
if you're
of
in
the
lounge,
had
you're
cool
mixing
things.
Drinks. Whether or not I liked that puzzle particularly, nonetheless, you're mixing drinks at the bar.
It makes sense. And I thought that was such a cool part of it. And another thing that was cool about the puzzle rooms, though, that, you know, could get really frustrating was that you always had the chance to find out some bonus information.
Oh, yeah.
If you not only, because there's the way it works is you'll go into the puzzle room and you have to find a password
to get into this safe.
Yes.
To get access to these two key cards you need for something else, the AB rooms, and a key to get out. But the safe has a false back.
So it'll rotate if you put a different password in.
And to get that, you usually have to do a more difficult solution to the same kind of puzzle. Sometimes they're different puzzles, but generally speaking, it's the same puzzle and you solve it in a slightly different way.
And once you start getting into that mindset, they get easier, though sometimes they're still ridiculous. I'm forgetting some of the ones that were the more ridiculous ones. But for an example, and again, you probably played the game, but the one I think of the most is there's one puzzle where these in the Golem Bay where all of these robots' light eyes will light up, and the lights correspond to a letter on a chart, and then it'll spell something out that you have to enter to get the password. But then it does, and with the gold file stuff, it never tells you what you need. You just have to infer it. You take the letters that are left and rearrange them to make another word.
Right, but you wouldn't know that because the first time you were gathering letters, you didn't have to rearrange them. But then when you, the second time, you actually have to rearrange them. So in that case, like, it's really not intuitive. They're really, you just, it's really, there are some cases like that. I'd say there's three or four times that for gold files, you have, it's not intuitive. It's,
see, I got that,
it's trial
one,
and error.
That one I thought, I mean, well, not necessarily the, I didn't get the word right away, but I got the idea that we're supposed to rearrange them. The one I'm trying to remember.
Well, let me also say, though, there are a couple times in the game, I mean, everything we're saying about this game is glowing, and it's pretty true, but there are a couple little flaws, and a couple of the puzzle rooms at times were a little bit wonky. One of the examples is that Golem room, where when you're looking at the Golem's eyes, which ones are lit up, it's very hard to figure out which direction to read the eyes in. That was very difficult. It took me a long time to figure out like which direction, because you actually had to like look at it left to right. And instead of going around, like you would think, you have to go left to right for the top row and left to right from the bottom row, which if you're standing in any position in the room, you can't see it that way. So you'd literally have to be looking at this diagram and thinking about it in a different way. It's a little wonky.
Yeah, no, I thought that puzzle was fine, but I agree that there are some like that for me were very, to that extent. I think that's just people's brain works different ways and how they see puzzles.
But that's the thing, though. Like, for what was intuitive to you wasn't for me, and then vice versa for some for you. And that means that, like, they're a little wonky, because a perfect puzzle room would be the kind that everybody intuitively, you know what I mean? That
not too easy. We're not
tricky,
saying that. But
tricky.
Yeah.
But logical to a fault. Anyway.
But yeah, some of the gold files got ridiculously hard. And I think, but those gold files aren't necessary at all to complete the game.
But they're so great.
They're
so
fun.
Great.
By the end of the game, if you get them all, you have this whole encyclopedia of the world, which I'm going to go back to when the new game comes out.
And actually, I actually haven't read them all yet, and I want to read some of them still. Because a lot of them, actually, I started finding out that some of them would spoil things.
Yeah.
That are
they
coming.
Were a little. I couldn't help myself.
Yeah.
I was reading them all as I got them, because they were so interesting. It's just so fun to read that stuff.
I know.
So those are the puzzle rooms, and if we don't talk to, like, the one other thing is sometimes the puzzle rooms, they of course go back to the story, because characters can go back to the
story. Yeah, that when you said a minute ago that they're so thematic, that's what I thought you meant, in the way that 999 was, in that you'd find stuff in the rooms that tied into the themes, but in this one, every room you go to has a very specific function. Like, later on you're going to find out where this facility is located. So there's a pressure exchange chamber because there's gravity issues. That makes sense. There's a pantry because, I mean, we might as well just say it. It turns out it's a moon base.
Yeah. And big, again, you should know this, but yeah.
You're in a moon base.
It turns out you're on a moon base.
You're on
but
the moon.
They so, hide that cleverly. Again,
very
everything's clever.
Everything is so clever.
Because there's one ending where you actually get to go through the big number 9 door that lets you escape. And you and
pretty
two other
early
characters.
On in the game, in fact, for me, I got Dio's ending first. And Dio's ending takes you outside the facility. So I knew they were in some weird place from very early on. But if I'd played the game a totally different way, that might have been the second or fourth to last ending.
Yeah, and so you go outside. You have to wear pressurization suits because the facility is under pressure because of Radical 6. That's the way they explain it. And so you
well,
go
no,
outside.
No. Oh, because Radical 6 is outside, so they have to pressurize the inside of the... Yeah, that's true.
And that's how they explain it.
And what's really clever, too, is that Radical 6, what you find out about this infectious disease, is that it slows down your consciousness by the root of 6, by square root of 6. Therefore, your brain processing speed is actually working like 0.408.
Which means gravity, time, everything that
you're perceiving. Your perception is slowed to a little less than half. So therefore, the gravity, which is, you know, 1/6, or I don't know all the numbers, but the gravity is less. So you would think things would take like longer to fall down to the ground. But because your perception is slowed, because you're infected with Radical 6. Oh, yeah, let's mention all 9 of the characters are infected with Radical 6 from the beginning. You find out at the end.
Yeah. And I think at this point.
And it slows down your processing speed, and it makes. And for things like Phi being able to jump like superhero, you find out that's why.
Yeah, and I think at this point we can probably just start talking concept to concept because we don't want to get too plot summary where we're explaining everything.
Yeah.
But as far as the Radical Six reveal, I thought that was one of the best ones in the game, where it was explaining all these, like, it was such a simple way to explain so many of these things.
I know.
Of course, it just made so much sense with Fi's jumping ability because they were on the moon, but it seemed superhuman. The fact that they went out onto the moon and saw the Earth, but it looked like the lunar, was it lunar?
It looked like a lunar eclipse, but it was actually a solar eclipse. And that's and the Earth was red, and that was fooled people. It fooled you. But the reason it's red is because, dun, 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 the year is actually 2074, and the Earth was destroyed in 2029, basically.
Well, yeah, it was right after when the game opens.
And right, a year later, actually.
Some of the characters remember it as being 2028.
In fact, for the entire game, you think it's 2028 still, and that you're, because they talk a lot about their abduction days. But again, it turns out, and that's another thing that ties into the puzzle rooms, there are these treatment pods that can put you in cold sleep. So you, Clover, Alice, and Fi.
Well, not you.
Oh, no, not you, because of other reasons. You're in a different treatment pod elsewhere. That's
but,
right.
But the way
but Clover, Fi, and Alice are all in a cold sleep. So they don't realize, and they're the only people you talk to specifically about the date.
I think you might talk to Dio, but he's a lying dick,
right,
so it makes sense he wouldn't be honest.
Right, exactly. If there's ever somebody that should be saying something that would reveal everything, they give them a motivational reason to not reveal it to you. It's so clever.
And so I think the whole Radical Six thing, what was really interesting is it had so many of these disparate ideas, because the characters that remembered the past didn't remember Radical Six being an issue.
Because it wasn't yet. They were put in cryosleep just before Radical Six happened.
This
outbreak. And by the way, it was released by Free the Soul, that group led by Brother and that Dio works for.
And who it also turned out apparently funded the pharmaceutical company from the first game.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't hear that part.
Yeah.
I didn't hear that part.
They
Where
were
did it say that?
Funding. It was in there somewhere. I forget exactly.
Oh, that's
There's a lot
too.
Of stuff to parse through. But anyway, the point of the story ends up being that the whole goal in this future where the Nonner game's happening again is to stop Radical Six,
and it's being released by Free the Soul at a facility, at this
it's
Nevada
like this Mars
facility.
Simulator
yeah Mars base. Simulation they're basically in 2028-29 they were planning this mission to Mars using these particle accelerator engines. Was that what they're called?
I think so, yeah.
And they wanted to test particle annihilation engines, and that's another big part of it. It turns out the world gets annihilated because all 18 of these that were located around the world were detonated at the same time.
Probably because
people were infected with Radical Six.
Makes now, your brain process information at this rate that really burns it out and makes you want to commit suicide.
Right. And a lot of people were thinking, well, if I'm going to die, I'm taking you with me. And it made them sort of, it basically led to apocalypse on Earth.
Yeah. And so you have hints at it throughout the game.
And like, also, like, for example, Quark and Tenmyoji, when you hear their story, which is some of the earlier endings that you get, they talk about, like, you know, how, like, Quark, for example, is adopted by Tenmyoji. It's his grandpa. And Quark tells this story about how he knew Tenmyoji really loved him and didn't resent him, you know, as a burden, was when Tenmyoji took him to this bar, and Tenmyoji was drinking alcohol like he once in a while did. But the rarest of the rare was a root beer float. And Tenmyoji, to show Quark how much he loved him, put together the money or the resources or whatever to get him a root beer float. So you start thinking, what kind of world is this that they come from where a root beer float would be that rare?
But the clever thing is they don't go too overboard with making it sound apocalyptic. That
right.
stuff sounds strange, but the idea that Tenmyoji is a junk collector, it's not too awful. I mean, it's not too off. I mean, and plus the game's set in the future.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even make that
like
connection.
In 2028.
You just made the junk collector part, but that would be exactly what you do with a burned out building from a post-apocalyptic world.
Yeah.
That's really clever.
But all these little things, you don't know what, because the game's set, you know, from our perspective, 16 years in the future, we don't necessarily know what the world's like then.
Right.
So
it could be
maybe
that
this stuff
root beer
is
floats
true.
Are just expensive. It could be that, you know, the roots for root beer became very rare at that point. Like, we don't know.
Yeah, and it's the sort of thing where he's a creator who really knows. I'm just going to say Kotaro because I feel like I'm pronouncing that name more rightly. Is he understands how to put all these pieces together and to craft things. And maybe he comes up with the ending first and then works backwards. But either way, he makes everything so cohesive and feel effortless in its telling.
Yep.
And another thing that worked
And
really
there's all
well,
kinds of red herrings, let's not forget.
Yeah, like red herrings out the so many of the endings have these moments where you're not quite sure.
And like, for example, for me, Fi does this, does that jumping thing at the very beginning. So I'm thinking she's either a superhero or maybe a robot, maybe. And especially in my path, I got to Golem Bay. And like we said about the, these puzzle rooms fitting in, Golem Bay is a big sort of early reveal. And that is that, that there's that the idea of these robots that can look like humans. And you find that out when you finish Golem Bay. And right then I was thinking Fi's a robot because she can jump like she can. And that, and also she sounds semi-robotic. And also whenever you get to hear all the mathematical options of how the color doors can be accessed, she spouts them out like 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, like almost semi-robotically. And she's kind of like very cold and bitchy. So all this stuff adds up. So he's very cleverly made you think that maybe she's the robot character. But alas, she's probably not by the end. But again, that's, well, we'll get to that. But that was a little disappointing to me. You never do find out what Fi's story is. It's the one thing you don't find out.
There are a couple of things you don't find out, but I would say that's the biggest because all the other characters get explored.
Yeah.
And so let's, as far as the characters go, I think we each have our favorites and our least
favorites. Sure, sure. Go ahead.
But just as a rundown, because in this one, I think it's more important, we've got Kay, who's this guy in a big suit of armor, and is
you liked a lot.
I liked Kay a lot. Yeah, I thought.
See,
he was
for me,
so...
there's this one moment, and I texted Jordan when this happened. But Kay, he puts on a real facade of like being a decent dude, very fair, very even-handed. And at a couple different junctures in the game, relatively early in the game, he will tell you, "I will ally. It is the most logical thing for me to do, to ally with you. Plus, if I did anything else, it would betraying a trust and a friend I just made. I would never do this," and all of that. And he goes on and on and on about it, how logical it is for him to ally with you. Oh, we didn't even mention the AB process.
Yeah.
That's another thing that's really cool about this game. And then there was this concept of ally or betray. So after you finish every puzzle room, you and the Tupi and the group that you teamed up with to go into the puzzle room, go get these cards, go back to the elevators, and then you get to vote whether you want, like, you, as a pair, if you're a pair, you vote as a pair. If you're solo, you vote solo. And you get to decide whether you want to play fair, basically, or betray your partner.
And so it's based on the idea, because
it's based on the prisoner's dilemma.
Yeah, it's based on the prisoner's dilemma. To get out, you have to have 9 points, and everyone starts with 3. And if you both ally, great, you both get 2 points. So it would only take 3 rounds for everyone to get to 9 points if no one was a dick, but that would be a boring game.
Right.
If you ally and your opponent betrays, you get nothing. And you
if you ally and they betray, you lose 2 points. And if you get under 0 points, if you go below zero.
Yeah, what I meant to say was if you both betray, nothing
happens. If you both betray, nothing happens. Right. So it's the safest thing to do is to betray if you don't want to lose points. But then you can't, and you may gain. Because if you betray and they ally, then you get 3, which is the most you can get. So the safest thing you can do is betray. The toughest thing to do is the riskiest thing, which is so clever. The riskiest thing to do is to be trusting, you know? And that leads me to the K thing, where K betrays you bad. Like, he literally just said, he convinces you wholeheartedly to ally with him. He's never done anything to make you distrust him up to that point. And then he betrays the hell out of you, real bad. And then when you come out, you're like, well, at least you're not going to go open the number 9 door. Because once anyone opens it, only they can go through it, if only they have 9 points already, then the door will never open again. And everyone in there will be stuck forever.
Well, other people can go through it, but they'll be injected with poison.
Right. Your wristband has poison in it. So literally, if K had 9 points and no one else did, he could leave. But he's been saying, even if I got 9 points, I would never leave you all. That would be terrible. I'd be killing you, et cetera, et cetera. Well, at the end, you say, you know, "Hey, what are you doing? You just betrayed me." And he's like, "I'm sorry I betrayed your trust, but people are being killed here. The most logical thing for me to do is to try to get 9 points as quickly as possible." And then you go, "Okay, well, at least you swore you wouldn't leave us all here by going through the number 9 door." And he goes, "I'm sorry to trample on your trust even further, but yes, I will be leaving."
No.
It's so brutal.
Technically what he agreed. No, wait, hold up. Yes, he'll do that.
There's one story where he does that.
Yes,
he says, "I'm sorry."
Fair,
to
yeah. All the characters do that at some point.
I know,
pretty much.
I know, but this was the first one, and so it really brutalized me.
See, I don't know. I can understand that. To me, Tenmyoji was the biggest dick in that sense.
No, but he wanted to save Quark and
Galactus.
Well,
I know, but he promised He promised not to open it. But then he's like, "I didn't open it. Dio opened it,"
right?
And follows him out.
Right.
And so Dio, who's probably one of the more important characters, is Dio, who says he's a carny. At the beginning of the game.
Which is funny because he looks a little like a carnival guy.
He's actually an infiltrator because he's a Myrmidon. He's one of
Free the Soul.
The clones of Left, the founder's brother's
right
son.
I think it's the son. It's either brother's son or brother's brother.
It just sounds silly. So probably son. And if we're forgetting, it's a small thing.
Right.
Because there's a lot to remember for this game.
There is. And I think we're getting really caught up in all the little details, and they're not as important. I want us to spend our time more talking about our impressions.
Our impressions, yeah. But as far as Dio goes, I think he was really interesting as a character because at first I wanted to like him, but he's so quick to make you hate him. And I like that because usually when it's a character you really hate throughout the game, you think they're actually going to turn out to be good, but he doesn't.
Redeeming, right. No, he is zero redeemable. And that's another thing. What's really clever, too, is Quark, who is probably Quark. If there's one character that was, like, not very important, I thought it was Quark.
He's a kid.
He doesn't really relate to anything. Only reason he's there is Tenmyoji dragged him along.
Because he wouldn't leave him behind.
Right. Sure. But he did drag him along and regrets it later. He's like, I should never have brought him here.
Because unlike other people, Tenmyoji knows what's going on. He's there.
He's there voluntarily. Because he wants to see Akane, and he was told that he could see Akane, which
because
is cool, because he's Junpei.
He's Junpei from the first game.
Now, explain this to me, Jordan. Why is his name Tenmyoji?
Because that's his last name. Because in the first game, they never say Junpei's last name. They just call him Junpei the whole time.
Is that his last name?
Yeah, that's his last name.
Tenmyoji. I don't remember where they say that part.
Well, it's implied. I mean, I don't think you need to have it said outright. Junpei Tenmyoji. I guess
that makes sense.
And so, just that reveal for, I mean, how is this not a sequel? Continues to be my question.
Yeah.
Things like this are popping up.
Alice is in it. Clover is in it. Junpei is in it. Turns out Akane Kurashiki is one of the two people behind the whole thing. Again. Now, she has very good reasons for doing it.
And very different reasons than the original game.
Very
true. Because this time, it's all about, again, stopping Radical 6. Because in order to do that, they need to really boost the morphogenetic.
So instead of saving them herself this time, and maybe the other children, I don't know. But this time, it's about saving the world.
And
so the
this
scope,
is where,
like we said about the exponential scope, think about that. We're on a world-saving scale now.
Again, and that ties into the game, because instead of just 7 endings, there's 22 different endings.
20, I think.
No, it's 22.
Oh.
And then, well, anyway, the point is, instead of having to go through the game each time, there's this flowchart that you can jump around. And at times, you'll hit locks because you don't know the information yet. But when you play through another timeline, it'll give you that information.
Which is how they gate the game. That's how they gate the secrets, guard the secrets from you. That's so that you don't get like a huge reveal that ruins other reveals on you.
Well, it makes sense, though. It's not like
it doesn't feel artificial at all. It doesn't feel artificial, but that is his clever way of gating the answers.
Yeah,
that's what that is.
And just as a fan of the series, the reveal that Tenmyoji was Junpei was so awesome because I loved Junpei. I thought he was an awesome character.
Oh, really? I didn't really think that much of him. I thought of him as a blank slate, pretty much.
I thought he had motivation. I mean, like, he had those smaller moments where he would think about his times with Akane as a kid.
Okay.
Particularly the very end, like the epilogue to the first game, really made me well up because it was so sad.
Well, speaking of welling up, can I move on to Luna?
Yeah, you can talk about
Luna. I want to talk about Luna. Okay. So I'm very much like an emo person in general. Like, I love like relationship stuff. I'm one of the few, you know, guys that I hang out with that like to talk about that kind of shit. And I love that kind of stuff. Now, I don't read 50 Shades, but you know, at the same time, you know, when they mix in, you know, a good love story with my great sci-fi, I'm all for that. And for me, like the whole, like, you know, your Sigma, you're, you know, ostensibly this 22-year-old kid. A college student, you know, the biggest reveal of all, which I think we'll save for the end,
yeah.
but the biggest reveal of all sort of changes that a bit. But for the almost entirety of the game, you're believing you're this 22-year-old kid who's flirting with all these girls, Clover, to some extent, Alice, to some extent. You're not really that interested in Alice, but you're mostly interested in Phi and Luna. It's kind of like a little love triangle, a little bit, because Phi will get jealous when you flirt with Luna, and Phi's always like, why are you being so nice to Luna and whatnot? Now, Luna's like this really sweet, but sort of like even-toned, even-paced girl, like really just the girl you couldn't hate. She's super sweet, super cutesy, you know, has this little bird cage with a bird in it around her neck. And she's very, like, emotional and sweet. She's the person that gets the most hurt when someone betrays her.
And she's a character that, again, plays with that expectation. Because you think that super sweet, super innocent character is going to end up really stabbing you in the back, but she doesn't.
No,
she
they make
is
you think she
sort
will,
of working against you in a way,
but only for a lot of, again, good reasons. And then even in the end, she sides with you and breaks rules. And yeah, anyway,
because
she's a golem. She's a robot. And but these golems are, you know, very advanced, because by this year, by 74, they've 2074, they've been able to make them very, very high tech, to the point where they have almost a consciousness that resides in this quantum computer in the facility. They actually have, like, feelings. They actually have emotions. It's crazy. But they're still a robot. And you know, Luna's ending was my favorite part of the game by far. And I've read online, there's other people that agree with me on this, is that, like, I've never, you know, the thought of crying over a robot dying, you know, is not something that, you know, you would expect. And this girl, you know, she, like, you find out she's a robot, and then she's like, "Will you just hug me before they turn me off and I'm dead forever?" And yeah, then, like, you hold her, and then you think it's going to be sweet. Next thing you know, her hair comes off in your hand. And she's like, "I'm sorry. When they injected me with the tubocurine, the muscles that hold my artificial biological tissue on and my hair on let go." She goes, "This is what I really am. This is who I am. I'm a robot, a golem. I'm metal and plastic." And she's like, "And yet you still love me." And then these tears are, like, pouring out of her eyes onto your shirt. And, like, this author is so good. He explains, like, how it would feel to have, like, the warm tears when somebody's, like, hugging you and crying. And then, like, when she's finally gone, like, you feel the tears are cold all of a sudden. I mean, it's so well written. And
it is.
And then they show, like, a progression of her tissue falling off and her becoming more and more of a robot there. And you're still, like, completely in love and holding her. It's so emotional. It's so good. To me, I was like, but for me, the moment, though, it's one of the most gated endings, because it's very integral to the whole thing. The Luna ending, it's like the third to last or second to last you can get. And second to last, I think. And to get it, you have to get two-headed lion keys twice, and then go there and use them both. And then when you do that, you get this file pops up, and it's got a golem, this, like, very, like, Terminator-looking robot, and then Luna's face. And I was just like, oh, my God. And then it says, and then they said, oh, look, what does it say right here? Appearance after application of ABT. And I was just like, oh, my God, I feel so betrayed and emotional and, like, hit over the head at the same time. That, for me, I'm, like, welling up now. I mean, that is, to me, that was so amazing.
It was a really good part of the game. And even though Luna wasn't one of my favorite characters, I was more, like, for me, my favorite characters were Tenmi Oji and Kay and Dio, probably. Just,
oh, wow, we're very different.
Not that Dio, like, I liked him, but I thought he was a good character. Like, he was fun.
Yeah, he was very
talk
interesting
to talk to.
See, for me, Kay was not it at all. And Tenmi Oji was interesting, but I don't think I loved him. Like, I wasn't endeared to him. I think for me, I liked Luna, Phi, probably the best. And then I liked Sigma too. Sigma's good. Anyway.
But yeah, as far as characters go, it turns out Luna, again, she's part of it in a way. She's not Zero, though, because there's another character that is part of it, and that's Kay, though he doesn't know it because he's the amnesiac. And in a game like this, you know, you kind of have to have it.
There's an amnesiac,
like,
in every one. There's this game, Ever 17, which is, like, one of the earlier games that, what is the guy's name?
Kotaro
was also
a writer on.
Was the writer on. And in that game, there's also an amnesiac character, and that's, like, a big thing that the whole game, you know, a pivot point that the game pivots on.
Yeah, and so Sigma, he has amnesia through the game, but he can remember a few things. He remembers being at this facility with this great doctor who was working on some scientific research, and he was there alone, and this woman comes who makes them feel like a family for the first time in a long time, and then he finds out about this horrible thing that's going to happen, and that he's going to have to continue the dad's research if it goes wrong, and he's not for it, but that's all he can remember at first. And then at he's in this suit of armor throughout the whole game, is one of the most important things. And so at a certain point, when you find out when you realize you have the key and he's laying there dying from the tubocurine or something, I forget exactly how it happens. And I'm pretty sure it's the tubocurine. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the doors don't open.
It is.
And so what happens is you take the mask off and there's Sigma's face, and you don't know what the fuck is going on at that point.
Right.
Because that's an ending. And he tells you a password at that point that comes into play later.
He says he promised to tell you this.
And you're just thinking, what's going on? Because suddenly there's you in this suit, and you're not exactly sure what's going on. And so Sigma's reveals, as it turns out, is actually a clone of Sigma, but not the young Sigma that, you know, you're playing as, or who you're playing as throughout the game, but of, and I guess we might as well go ahead and talk about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Dio, the stuff with Dio, he's actually a Free the Leader. He tries to bomb the place because they want Radical Six to get out. I think that's what
right.
he's saying.
Right.
Clover and Alice have their parts, but I think the big thing is when you get to the end and you find out who Zero is, and it's Sigma.
It's you.
It's been
but
you.
But it's the, you in the future.
Because morphogenetic fields are all about being able to jump around. And at first, like the first game, what it focused on was this ability to grab information and to be able to read from it. But in this game, it turns out that you can use it to move through time, not just read across time. So you can switch consciousness.
You can move your consciousness.
Yourself.
But the only way to do that is through a use of many factors that only, you know, are developed over the years between 2029 and 2074. And that research that Dr. Sigma Kleem does. And then that research, what they find out is a lot of little factors. And the person who tells you this is Akane, because Akane and Sigma are like partners in this AB project.
And the
which was set up.
Animus and body.
It means animus and body, but also after and before. It means both things. It's got dual meanings. And the
animus means spirit.
Right.
I mean, you probably know that, but
right,
still.
Right.
Worth saying.
And so the idea is that in order to take morphogenic fields to the next level, and make it like 4D and that you can jump through time consciousnesses. There's very similar reasons in that respect for this notary game as the last one, in that you need to create life or death situations, but also in order, see, they can make the, they found out through their studies that they could make the consciousness travel between timelines, but they were having trouble with the person that traveled remembering what they did in the other timelines. But like anything in life, and that's what's so brilliant about what Kotaro does in this. I hope I'm saying the right name. Is it Kotaro?
Kotaro, I think.
Look it up again, man, because if we're saying the wrong name, people are hearing
it, they're
going to be really repulsed.
I
hate that when
repulsed.
I hate that when I listen to a podcast and they're like, oh, saying the wrong thing over and over again.
It's Kotaro. Anyway.
Okay,
go ahead.
But anyway, what I was saying is, you're right, I sometimes get intense. Repulsed is a strong word. But anyway, the idea is that they won't remember. And like what Kotaro does so brilliantly is that he adds real world concepts in with the made up fictional conceits that he comes up with to make it make logical sense. So for example, practice makes perfect in life. The more you practice something, the better you get at it, right? So that's why they have all these timelines, is because they need to jump between them over and over and over again, because the more you do that, the more you train your brain to be able to remember the other timeline.
And it's not just that, it's the danger. They have to have Radical Six. They have to be on the verge of death. There has to be this real threat of someone killing them.
Although
the
Radical
Six
really played a role, because another thing they found out was in order to do the consciousness jump, they have to store up potential mental energy. And Radical Six, by only using your brain at a slow rate, is storing this energy. It's pretty crazy.
It is. I mean, it's very high. It's far. It's very out there. It's much more thought out and thinky than it was in the first game. And the first game was really well developed. And so is this one. And so what you find out about Sigma is that he's a clone. He's supposed to continue your research. And that when you came to the future to take part in the Nonary game, the future version of your consciousness, the old man Dr. Sigma Kleem, because, you know, throughout this is, he's gone back to the past to try and stop what caused Radical Six to be released
in this Mars mission facility in the desert.
Yes. But, and that's where it again gets clever, because like the first game, there's that whole thing that you don't question until they point it out to you, because throughout the whole game, you never see Sigma. Like
you never
see him
see
in the
your
past.
Face. Right. You see, because you're a young man in the game, consciousness wise. So therefore, when you look back at your past, you remember yourself in a certain way. So you see your face in those flashbacks.
Because he was abducted on 2028.
But you never see him look in a mirror, be shot by a video camera, any of that. For example, I just thought of it, but when Fi is going through the footage, she very cleverly never sees his face. Or when Luna's hugging you, you see from your neck down. Always.
because as it turns out, you know, you're in the old man's body. You're missing, you have a robotic eye and you don't know because it's advanced technology.
Right.
You have artificial arms, but again, you don't know
because
that.
They're golem arms.
I mean, you learn
ABC.
That as you're going along, and that makes you think Sigma might be a robot, but
right.
That's not the case.
And Luna even asks you in one of the endings, are you a robot? In Sigma's ending. And then by the end, you find out, no, you just have these robot arms.
Yeah. And so that's the big thing where he's so smart to take these game mechanics that you don't question. Like, you don't question the fact that you never see him throughout the game.
Right.
You're thinking, okay, I'm from his point of
view.
It's a
first-person game. That's how first-person games roll.
And so when you get that big reveal that he's the guy behind it the whole time, it's like, well, damn.
You're behind it. That's crazy. So if you could take it one level further than your childhood friend who's this sweet, innocent girl being Zero, what could possibly go further than that? Oh, you yourself are Zero. Holy shit.
And Kay, who is also Kyle Klein, his cloned son, as it were, isn't always Kay.
No, because that wouldn't be possible. Sometimes he's Akane Kurashiki pretending she has amnesia.
Because like I said, in the first timeline I played, there wasn't a dead body in one of the elevators. There's this in the other two, though, there's this dead body of an old woman. Because at the very end of the game, after you meet Akane in the prime timeline where you've kind of finished the whole project.
Right.
Out, and she's explaining how, you know, consciousness are jumping around both for you and for Fi because, you know, the future version of you has to go back in time to be able to figure out what's going on. Because the young you still needs to become a researcher and do all that stuff.
Right.
But the older you jumps back and has this month or so span where he can try and stop the Radical Sixes.
And by the way, this is just another point of complication, but they've tried once and failed.
Yes, which is what leads to the bad timeline where he has to become a researcher. And he's lost both arms.
And his eye. And that's how you lose your arms and eye.
Yeah. But what also happens is she attacks Fi and you... I forget if that's... exactly.
It seems like she's attacking Fi, but then it also seems like she's hitting Fi with the blood of her thing, and then you get hit, and it's
the shock. That's the whole point,
right?
This threat of death. But anyway, what happens is after you figured things out, you jump back in time to before the Nonary game started, and you get out of the elevator early as the future
Dio,
you.
And you stop Dio from killing the old woman who's Akane.
Yeah.
You didn't know he was, and you found out he was the one who killed her a while ago and the one who set the bombs a while ago.
But he doesn't know that you knocked him out because you get him from behind and then put him back in his elevator.
Right.
So he doesn't know what happened, and that's why he never mentions it.
Right. It's all very, very clever. But what we're getting at here is what's so clever is you're an old man the whole game. So what makes that so cool is that at many points in the game, you're flirting with all the girls because you're 22. Any 22-year-old would. And they'd think they'd have a chance with them, right? Well, every one of the girls, almost without exception, calls you a perv for it. Why? Because you're an old man hitting on little girls.
And not even
And you
that.
Don't know it.
It's the fact that, like, the first... Because Rich was restarted the game last night.
Oh, this is amazing. I started the first three minutes again because I wanted more.
And he got to the... You can...
Yeah, I got to the part at the very beginning in the very first elevator when the game first starts. And Fi, you go close to Fi, and she's like, back off, Grandpa. I couldn't believe it. I was thinking maybe the game changed itself, but no, it didn't. I know it was there the first time. He's literally, and Jordan's comment was, what a clever bastard the author is.
Yeah.
Literally, she tells you from the very beginning moment of the whole game that you're an old man, and you don't listen.
Because you... It's just not there. You aren't making that connection because it doesn't seem like a connection you need to make.
Maybe
she's just
thinking,
a year or two younger than you.
Right. Maybe she's thinking you're an old man because you're 22. And then there's another point Jordan reminded me of where in the game they tell you, oh, you're 22? Man, you must have lived a hard life. You know what I mean? Like a joke. And it's really, really clever. So you don't realize you're this old man the whole time. And yeah. But yet people are giving you clues to it. So if you played the game again, it's kind of like Lost. A lot of people go back and rewatch Lost, and there's all these clues to what's going to happen in the sixth season in the first and second. And it's like, oh, my God, how clever. Well, this game's, even cleverer in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, the story in this was just phenomenal. And I think what really sold it was it had a great cast of characters who all had moments that were really interesting to talk to them. Like some of the characters in the first game got to the point where they were there more to talk about the scientific stuff than to talk about their own lives.
Mm.
Like I think with Alice, it was sort of not all Alice.
Lotus,
it was kind of that way because she was talking about computer programming stuff.
Right.
But in
right.
this game, everyone was talking about something. And even if it wasn't about the Nonary game, it was about something like Alice and Clover. They didn't have as much to do with the game itself, but they knew about Free the Soul. They would expose about those guys. They would talk about the Myrmidons. They would be telling you these things.
Right, which is all very relevant. And it's just very, very clever. And then by the end, you find out why everybody's there. And a lot of it's because a lot of them are espers like Jinpei, and he could, you know, help. And see, espers, when they get to espers, are people that can access the morphogenic field and then travel their consciousness through time. The more of them you gather together, they amplify each other's powers. So that explains why espers are there. Clover, that's why Clover's there, etc. Now, the one thing that was a little wonky in my mind, and I talked about this with Jordan last night, was that when I finished the game, was that Alice's reason for being there was that she can, I mean, at least what the game says her reason for being there is, what Akane tells her, the reason she was brought as opposed to someone else, is because she can solve really hard math problems.
In her head,
that's wonky.
That's not that bad. Look,
so could Sigma. So could a lot of people.
Sigma couldn't do
it
to that. Or, well, look.
Dr. Sigma Kleem?
Not the younger memory of him. Okay, look, the point isn't that it was that. She had something to do with the first game. She had ties to the Myrmidons. She could give explanations about who they were. Like, Akane in the first game showed she could see this path and understand who needed to be where in order to do that. So I don't necessarily think Alice was the most integral to the plot, but I think her being picked as both someone who knew about this stuff, who worked with Clover, I think it made sense.
I think you made, I do too. I just think you made a very clever point last night when you said, she was there at the end of the last game. She had to be there in this game.
Yeah, it was kind of a moment of that. Because, you know, it's not necessarily a game where he knew he was going to get a sequel.
No.
But this
in
time,
fact,
he's...
if it hadn't blown up like it did, there would not be one.
And you know,
he
I'd
says
still be...
he credits the success, not in Japan, but in America, for pushing forward the sequel.
And you know what? I think I'd be, even if it never had gotten a sequel, I'd have been satisfied, because 999 is such a great game.
It is a great standalone game. And just them driving off into the sunset, chasing after them, is like... it's an ending and not an ending in a very satisfying way. And that was a slight issue that I had with this game, in that, as I said earlier, Fi was one of my favorite characters. It wasn't Jordan's, not at all. Maybe one of your least. You said
no,
it was one of your least.
I didn't say she was one of my least. I just said she was kind of bitchy and mean. Not that I hated her. Like, I'd say if I were going least favorite character, it would probably be Quark or Alice or Clover. But, I mean, she'd probably rank in the middle.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that. Well, anyway... but she was on my top, and I felt like she was like really close to me, Sigma. And her name is Fi, and my name's Sigma, so like Sigma Fi. And I'm like, what's going on? Who's Fi? What's her deal? I've always wondered that. Because of the jumping thing, I thought she was a robot for a while. I knew from looking on the internet a little bit and looking at the flowchart that her ending was the last ending. So I thought maybe she was Zero. I thought maybe there was some kind of like details about her. But no, she's the one character who's... you know, they tell you that the reason she's there is because she can also travel her consciousness through time, but they don't tell you her backstory, where she comes from, who she is, how she's related, any of that, which is cool. And this game left a lot of things like that at the end.
Yeah, this one knows it's having
a... yeah, this one knows there's going to be a third one. And I think this would be a good time for us to go... we've been talking a lot. I think it would be a good time to go into our thoughts on where that sequel might go.
Yeah, well, let's... so the very, very ending...
yeah, yeah, go ahead.
Sigma, he's sent back in time to after the failed infiltration of the Mars mission where Radical Six is, and he's lost his arms, and Akane says he has to go do this now because the older version of him still has a chance of fixing things in the past.
Okay.
And so that's where that leaves off, where we know that he's going to be a part of this, and that's going to be pretty much the thrust of the next game.
Right.
Is trying to stop this, because Free the Soul still wants it to happen. They want
right.
Radical Six
in fact, the reason they sent Dio in... to infiltrate this AB game. See, Dio wasn't meant to be an original member of the game, and they send him in. Now, of course, the masterminds Akane and Zero knew he was coming. However, he wasn't, you know, technically part of the game. He at least he thinks, and his boss thinks, that they're sending him in to destroy the AB game, because the AB game's goal is to go back in time and stop this outbreak. Who started the outbreak? Free the Soul. And they did it because they're trying to cleanse humanity. And basically what that means is, and very twisted, they're a terrorist organization, a cult. And all they want to do is... brother wants lefts to be all the population of the world. He wants his son, who was killed, or brother, I wish I knew, whose name is Left. He just cloned hundreds and millions of these lefts. And we don't see, not maybe millions, but lots and lots of
lefts. Enough that there's a warrior class of them.
Of lefts. They all look like Dio. They all talk like Dio. Their all names are all Left, which is weird. But the point is that he wants a whole world of lefts, and that would be like a great human race to him. So to achieve that, he wanted to destroy the Earth, basically.
Yeah.
And he does it by getting Radical 6 released. We don't know if it was created as a bioweapon by the U.S. and then released by him.
Yeah, there's still a lot of question marks.
There's a lot of question marks, and that's so cool.
And so that's going to be the thrust, is your theoretical—see— But that's the
interesting thing.
You don't know we don't have any idea necessarily who you're going to play as directly. You might be Fi in the next game. You might be a new character because there's another part to the ending.
I wonder if you are Fi. I wonder if that's why.
Well, the thing is, and I thought this was really cool. Rich was a little more lukewarm on it. There's also an extra part to the ending. Like, you unlock the ending that's set in the very past where you're the younger Sigma with his arms missing and all that. But then at the same time, after that Sigma has departed, there's this other part in the bottom right of the timeline where someone other than Kyle Klim, who was in the Sigma suit, has jumped into his consciousness and
right.
is in his body.
And we don't know who. And it doesn't tell you who. And I was waiting and waiting and waiting because it's the last scene of the game. And then Akane is there to talk to him. And she's like, you don't know who you are by now? Basically saying to me, the player, duh, you don't know?
No, I don't think it's saying
that.
No,
that's how I felt, though. I know it's not saying that, but that's
how I
felt at
that
moment.
Here's what I think. There's two ways that could go, and this is my thought. On the one hand, and this is probably the more likely, I think it's interesting because by him saying he's not Kyle Klim from the past, because he's from that same time period, this consciousness, but he's not Kyle Klim. So what that means is that the person who's Kyle throughout the whole game, who's in the K armor in two of the timelines, is going to be in another person's body throughout the third game and might be a mystery element as to who that is. Like, that's one possibility, that he's going to be someone in disguise.
Right.
The other thing, because these games get very meta, they get very referential to the fact that you're playing a game, to the style that you're playing a game, is that it might be referencing to the fact that you're the player and that you've been watching this from the outside.
It's possible. It's possible.
And that in the third game, you're going to be that player.
It's definitely possible, and that, like you said, it'll be a whole meta thing of like, you're not Kyle Klim, you're Rich Lepore, you're Jordan Alseca, you're whoever's playing this game. Because really, what is life but perception? I mean, you know what I mean. You could go as meta as you want, and that's definitely true. I think the interesting question that we face now, and what's there's a suckiness to it, and that is we got to wait about 2 years probably to know. Maybe a year. Maybe they'll
see.
Maybe
I think it could go faster because
it could
they're
be
already working on the sequel.
Right,
so,
it could
I mean,
be here. Oh, and but anyway, the point is that I was questioning, you know, okay, they found a way to make this game be all about a nonary game again, right? But I wonder if the third game is going to do that. I wonder if they're going to try to pigeonhole another nonary game into it, or if they're going to just scrap all that and have it be this infiltration mission into the Mars base.
See, I think... to say that it retreaded, to a certain extent, the idea of the nonary game, yeah, but it was a totally different version.
This is not a criticism.
I'm not saying that.
It is me saying that instead of coming up with an entirely new game, they did another nonary game.
But it is a completely different style of nonary game. I think the staples of the series are still going to be there. Like,
is there going to be another style of nonary game again in the third game? That's what I'm asking.
I don't think that really matters. Like, I think there are going to be puzzle rooms. There's going to be a lot of story, and that's going to be the game. I don't think they're going to take puzzle rooms out or make it just a visual novel. Like, whether or not it's called a nonary game might be splitting hairs, because I think it's going to be an infiltration. Like, one of the things they set up.
I'll tell you why I don't think it's splitting hairs, because here's what I see when I see the nonary game. Here are the elements that I think I'm done with at this point. Talking about doors. Talking about who I'm going to partner up with. Waiting on doors to open and close. Waiting for scanners to go up and down and scan me and see if I've got the right elements to get through to this room. All that shit that was literally about 4 hours of the process of playing this game. Like, I don't need any more of that.
I really think it won't be there.
I think
here's
you're
why.
Right.
Here's what I think. Like, because at first, an infiltration... because they set up that this Mars place obviously has traps because Sigma loses both his arms and an eye.
Which is badass.
Getting into
right.
the place.
But because consciousness can travel and things can be redone, so they're introducing this whole time travel, like you can change the future concept, but that maybe some people's futures won't be changed. It's very iffy and very cool.
Set up this idea that the past is affected by the future.
Right, and vice versa. And so therefore, though, you may be able to make it so you don't lose your arms and eye. That's
and
possible.
So what I'm thinking is you're going to have this Mars base, and it's going to be very big and varied and have all the kind of different rooms that you'd want it
We've already been told it's got weird defenses and traps and stuff.
So I don't necessarily think that there will be a Nonary game, but there will be a small team. There's going to be Phi and Sigma because they're the ones who try to infiltrate at the very least.
Yeah.
So what I'm thinking is you're going to have moments. You're probably going to pretend to be officials at this place or maybe somehow do that. You're probably going to be picking, do I want to go to the research lab this time or do I want to go to the hangar bay? Do I want to go here or there? I think it's going to be all about choice again because otherwise you'd have a straight linear story.
Right,
you need
to
have the ability to pick different paths and figure things out that way. And I think now that you know that dying, like for them, dying's not an issue as much anymore.
Right.
Like they can die in order to find new stuff out.
Right.
And I think that's
what Akane
play into
says
the game.
About the Radical Six infecting them, you know, as unethical as that seems, or about all the people dying. She kept saying it is a necessary evil or a necessary component of the AB game's success.
Yeah, so I think a third game might be a little more blood heavy. I mean, if they're necessarily not against like more violence and more being like justifying the means is kind of the feel this series has always had.
It definitely has. And another thing I think is you just reminded me that I love about these games. I think it's about the time to start talking about like our overall impressions, you know?
Yeah.
And one thing I want to say about this is I love that this game pulls no punches on the violence, on the gore, and on the F word. Like they like the game will just be going along and it's never frivolous. They never throw it in there just to get the M rating. But there'll be fucking shit and all kinds of curse words thrown in there just like real people would say them, you know, and they never shy away from any of that, even though it's a storybook in essence,
yeah,
you know, but it's a storybook that's so patently adult. And I love that.
I think what's really interesting about that is because some of the timelines are absolute bloodbaths.
Yeah, they are. Like literally, you walk in, there's a pool of blood, and everyone's laying over there dead, except for a couple people. And that's interesting. Like, Kay's not dead in there.
Yeah.
In that scene.
And I just think what's really, like, my overall impression of this game was, like, and this is the thing I get with the Zero Escape series in general, is it's the kind of thing where it starts off, and the puzzle rooms are fun, and you're enjoying it, and you're learning things slightly. And the middle section, you're kind of, you know, you're going through it. But then when you start getting those reveals and you start learning things and pieces start falling into place, you're just going more, more, more. Right. I want more. Like the ending is, I don't know how long it took you to get through, but for me, it was like an hour and a half to 2 hours just story. But I was going because I just wanted to know more and more and more. And it keeps letting things in. And it's so fun to learn all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I think something that the series has done really well in both cases, because Zero Escape, like, at first, I wasn't loving it just because it has a bigger middle section. It has a longer amount of time where you're not going
to
know everything.
When I was talking to Jordan at first, I was getting worried. And he was getting worried last night when I finished the game, and I didn't sound like I was loving it because it literally was taking me time to process. Like, I had to figure out what I thought and how significant it is that he's an old man the whole time because I wasn't thinking about that aspect of it. I was all weighed down in the details because, you know, this guy who writes these, he had to come up with this very detailed, very complex description of, and like there's like this sheet you get at a certain place, which has like A to B to C to D to E, but the A is down here, B is up here, then D is between them. And there's all this like craziness about consciousness going from everywhere. And I thought that was very convoluted and ridiculous. But what it does is it legitimizes the science. It allows them to say, this is how it really works. If you want to really get down to it and look at exactly who goes where and when, this will make sense of it if you spend an hour or two figuring it out. And I'm getting all bogged down in those details when all you really need to know is young consciousness went back in time or young consciousness went forward in time, old consciousness going back in time, period. That's all you really need to know.
And
all those details were convoluting my mind when all I really need to think is, oh my God, I was an old man the whole time.
But that's the thing that's so brilliant about it. He doesn't necessarily need those details, but he always puts it in.
He legitimizes everything.
Like, we could sit here another hour just thinking of all the little moments and all the little hints and moments that tied into other things that we might have completely forgotten about.
And there Schrodinger's cat and the Chinese room and all kinds of crazy stuff. And there's like, and the Voigt Kampff test to test whether a robot is really a robot or a human. I mean, and there's those three I mentioned, multiply that by 10.
And the thing that's really great is even when you think you have the reveals figured out, you don't have the reveals figured out in his games. Because I figured Sigma had something to do with it pretty early on to a certain extent because this was really blatantly done is the fact that both he and Zero the Third had the same tick. Because Zero the Third would do everything in bunny puns, and Sigma had this whole thing where he would do stuff in cat puns.
What was up with that? Did we ever get that explained?
I think that was just a quirk of him, but it leaked through to Zero the Third, and I was going. So that's why I was suspicious. But that's the thing. This is the kind of game where you're suspicious of everybody.
Right.
So, I mean, even if something's there, you don't. That's what's so impressive is that in a genre where you're always suspicious of everybody, that he can pull off surprises as legitimately as he does is very impressive.
Like, it may be that we could find out in the next game that Brother also knows how to use this. Okay. Oh, ooh, ooh. They said it. Oh my God, I just made a connection. That's what's so great about this. Okay. They said, you know how Brother knew about this AB game?
How?
Because he is also an Esper. I forgot that reveal.
Yeah.
He's an Esper too. Therefore, the next game could very well have his consciousness in one of the players trying to derail you the whole time. It could be Fi, for all we know. And that's why they didn't want to give us too much on her. Because then we'd know the real from the fake in the next game.
Yeah, I mean, there's just so many
moments.
But
that's one possibility.
It's one possibility of so many. Right. You're right. And
he's created the ultimate thing. You know how, with the, he had to do it very artificially with the K bodysuit. You didn't know who he was because he's got armor on, literally. Well, it was very, like, it looked or seemed a little artificial. Well, now that we know consciousnesses travel, he can do the whole mask thing without a mask.
Yeah.
How brilliant. He set himself up for so many options.
Like, just hands down, as far as writing in video games go,
there's no better.
There's no pinnacle. I mean, I'll be talking about on the main show how I really like the story in Halo 4, but as far as
life,
it doesn't hold a can. It doesn't hold anything up to the.
But you know what I think, and this is where we get into a certain conversation where I think I may or may not agree with you a little bit, in that I find this game not even comparable. I find this game on a whole different level in every way than anything else we play on this podcast or play. It is not like anything else. I don't think, like, when we talk game of the year, and I know we'll be saying this is a game because technically it's on our 3DS or Vita. Technically it is a game. You interact with it, etc. But I think this is less like any other game we play than any of those games are different from each other. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I understand.
I think it's literally in a class by itself. And that may mean it's the best thing ever. You know, I really am right now feeling kind of like that. But at the same time, I feel like it's almost incomparable.
Well, I mean, I don't know that it's incomparable, though, because I think it succeeds at something inside of the genre where it has these gameplay elements and it ties in.
Not that much gameplay elements, though. It's got the escape rooms. But
that doesn't make it a video game because, again, I think to us, our exposure to visual novels as a gaming genre is so small.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is a big thing over in Japan.
It's just, yeah, but I just think that it's so vastly different than anything else we play. It's just hard. It's really hard to not say it's apples and oranges,
yeah,
to some extent.
No, and I mean, I'm not saying that, okay, if we had a bunch of other visual novels, because it's clearly, even in its own field, it's something special.
Oh, because that's why we're seeing it, right?
Yeah. And so, like, just... It's a great game, and I think if you've played it, you know that, and you're listening, and hopefully, you know, maybe you agree with Rich on the characters that are best in me. I'd say, if we're going, like, what was your favorite reveal? I'm guessing it was Luna.
Definitely Luna. Definitely Luna. And then I'd say, what did I like other than that? I think it was the Luna thing, and I think, of course, the old man thing.
Yeah, the old man thing is really good. I think for me, it was finding out that Tin Miyoji was really Junpei, just because I like Junpei a lot, and I was excited to have references to him.
Is
but
that
just,
when you knew? Did you know as soon as you saw the Akane picture that Tin Miyoji was carrying around? Is that when you knew?
Yeah.
I didn't remember about that part. I didn't remember about that part in 999, so it didn't hit me then. Took me a while.
I had suspicions. I wasn't entirely sure because of the time thing, but once it became obvious that they were in the future, I was like, yeah, this is the case.
That's so
and I
cool.
thought that was so cool, and I thought it just so much about this game works.
And there's
so
much,
levels.
And like you said, this is what you said, and I think it rings really true. It's a good first full circle comment, is just the vastness of how much they opened up the world in this game. Like, just think about, okay, K references how there's over 50 rhizomes, these moon bases. And this game came up with its own language and nomenclature and specific verbiage for things. You know what I mean? It's almost invented its own language.
I don't think they were moon bases. I think those were the craters or rhizomes.
No, I don't think so. I think it's the base that goes down into the... It is. It's the base that goes down into the ground and spreads out its little veins or whatever.
I mean, I'm
either way. That up. Either way.
But yeah. I'm pretty sure it's the creator because, I don't know. Well, no, it's a massive roots. So I don't know.
Matt Rasmus' massive roots. It's the base that roots down into a crater. That's what I read.
I think it was in the ninth. Well, anyway, I don't think that we're getting.
There are 50 of these moon bases plus. That's the point.
I don't know that I agree with that because I don't remember that exactly. I think it was that it was in the ninth crater or something. But look, it's an irrelevant point to just kind of argue about at this point.
Right.
The point is, it's a great, great story that has set up a lot of possibilities with Free the Soul, with the Mars base, with the characters from 999 who are conspicuously absent in this game.
Right. Like a good point. Snake, you mentioned.
Snake, Clover's brother. He was gone. Also an Esper.
Who kind of looks a little like Brother. Now, I know that's probably not possible, but maybe. Because Brother is a Esper, and Snake is an Esper. And Snake and Brother look a little similar. They have the long blonde hair and all that.
And then there's also Santa, who's missing, which is Akane's brother. And you'd think might be around his world-saving sister, because he's also an Esper. And it's yet really he's not in the game at all.
It's really interesting. You don't see him at all. And then what's also interesting is Fi has like white hair also, which and nothing in this game happens for no reason usually. So I'm just saying, I mean, it's very possible that, okay, she just has white hair. But I think that like she and Sansa, but they also have that same attitude.
Yeah.
You know, they're both the bitchy, snarky assholes. I mean, Dio also is the snarky asshole, but they were almost the more jaded ones. Dio's almost like arrogant, whereas they're jaded, you know?
Yeah, and so overall, I think it set up a lot of possibilities, and it has us both really wishing that the third game was out. I said last night I envy someone who comes to this series when the third one's already out
and that is such all three. That comment couldn't be more true, because it's like if you're watching a series of television and you watch the fourth season right before the fifth season's about to premiere, and it's like the most amazing cliffhanger, and then boom, season premiere.
Yeah.
Like, I would love to have been in that situation with three, but at the same time,
I envy Tim because he's yet to start playing them, and he's going to get.
He doesn't
have
to suffer like this. I know it's not kind of the way I feel about Bioshock Infinite coming out, but that's beside the point. It's like, boy, is that 5 years in the making, right? it'd be nice to play Bioshock and then just go right into that. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. Well, I think we've come full circle with this. I think the point is though that this game is. I got it. I got the last question. Comparison to 999. Because I think that I like them for different reasons. And I think that as a reveal at the very end, I think I liked 999 a little better for its final reveal personally. But only because I knew a reveal was coming in this. You know what I mean?
It's hard to explain. It's hard to understand why. Coming in the first one.
Right. Yes and no. But it's what I mean is I knew a lot more of the way that this writer operates and the way he structures his stories. So I knew a little more about the beats and the moments I was expecting. So the first one was more of a surprise and more often than this one was to me, a little bit. However, gameplay-wise, mechanics-wise, story writing and structure-wise, complication, world building, in all those ways, this game is far superior.
I would say I'm mostly agree. I think gameplay-wise, the way it functions, the way you take notes, I mean, which we're a little crappy on the Vita, but whatever. Also, we both played different versions. I think play whichever version you want.
Yeah,
I would say.
Yeah, I'd say so too. Actually, I think we both agree that the best version by far to play would be on a 3DS XL, because then you'd have the benefit of the big screen.
No, I prefer the Vita.
Then the 3DS XL with the big screen?
I mean, I guess if you have one, yeah, but I'd rather. I mean, the Vita just has a nicer screen overall.
I don't know. Then that 3DS XL one? I don't know. I haven't used it, but
I mean, the 3D effect is nothing.
The 3D is not what I'm talking about.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just talking about the touchpad. I know. The touchpad is nice.
That's a huge benefit.
Like, if you have if you have one of the fancy styluses that works on the Vita, though, it's whatever. I really liked it on the Vita overall. I don't know.
Okay.
But I didn't play the 3DS version, so
right,
I'm biased.
Right.
Anyway.
No, it's just the interacting with the puzzles. There are a lot of times when you have to touch small little points, and having the stylus to do that is the reason I picked up that version.
Yeah.
Is just to be able to interact with that stuff and taking notes, whatever. You could grab paper like you did. That's not so
Yeah, I was
it.
Sketching out puzzles and stuff to figure them out. So.
You have to. And that paper that they give you, like the two little pages,
not enough. Especially because
right.
I started taking the, like I wrote the passwords down that you need to remember that it doesn't remember for you. And then I was out of space and it's like paper. And I think it's fun. I really like that aspect of the game where you're working stuff out and really working your mind.
Yeah, well, that was you on the other game, like your favorite of the year too.
Fez.
Right.
Anyway, in terms of comparing the games, like I was saying, I agree on a lot of points. I think gameplay wise, structure-wise, story depth-wise, number of concepts, all that is better. I think I agree in those points, but there's one point on where you think 999 is better that I disagree, and one point where you think Virtue's Last Reward is better that I disagree.
Okay.
And in the first one, it's that I think with Virtue's Last Reward, the reason I like the reveals there more and that I think the story works on a different, in a different level, and that I like it more as a game overall, is because even though I knew his style and knew this stuff was coming, he still managed to pull the rug out from under me a couple of times and really surprise me.
Sure.
Like the first game, I wasn't sure where it was going. And like here, even though I knew about morphogenetic fields and I knew about the ability to read through time and all that, it didn't fully click. And I was able to get this big surprise. And I really liked that. As far as 999, the thing I think it does better is in the way the story is told in the writing, particularly because I felt like, and I think they're both phenomenal. I'm not saying it's a big difference. It's like a very small thing. But overall, I think 999's writing was more detailed. Like there was more richness to it. And that might be because the environments, and even here, they're still pretty limited. I mean, there's 3D models, but there's not a lot of motion for that 3D.
Yeah.
And the environments are still pretty static.
He has a lot of time. He spends a lot of time like books do, where they talk about like the scene and setting it.
Yeah, whereas in this one, it was pretty much dialogue 95% of the time. Whereas in the other one, it was probably an even split between this narration and this description of the gore and the blood. And it felt more visceral.
I saw a lot of that in this one.
Well, I saw it, but I think when you have
like
that
tears,
model.
Like I was talking about the tears on the chest seems and great. That kind of stuff.
I just think that there was a slightly more adult presentation to some of this stuff than in this one, where it was a bit more blatant.
But let's not forget what a huge difference the voice acting makes.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the voice acting really
another level. I mean, to a point where they're really not even comparable, because there's no way I can care about characters as much when I don't hear them talking. Like, it's not to say that the voices are that important, but they are, because it's like, it's a whole nother dimension to these characters.
Well,
when you read a book, though, you can fill those things in, so in that way, it's fun. I think
there are ways a book can be better, like if the voice acting were terrible,
right,
then it would detract,
right,
but I'm not saying obviously the voice acting is not terrible. I don't know, I think overall, it's hard to pick a winner, though. Like, they're both such
shining achievements in terms of storytelling. They really are, and I think that without the first one, you could never have the second one. You know what I mean? Like, it's a building process.
Yeah.
And so therefore, like, you know, the first one's seminal, and you got to look at seminal things like a seminal punk rock record. You know what I mean? And like, that is something that all this other stuff that comes later that you may like better, you can't say it's better than that first amazing seminal punk record in some respects. Because if you didn't have that, 10 ideas that are in this wouldn't be there, you know?
Yeah. But I mean, I would overall probably, if I ever had to pick one, I'd say Virtue's Last Reward.
I would too. There's way more to it, especially. Like, I mean, literally, there's almost three times as much content. So, I mean,
it does without being bogged down, which was really impressive.
Yeah, no, it's very interesting. Well, I think that about covers it. And that concludes our first spoiler cast. I think this is fun.
Yeah, this is a lot of fun just talking about it.
It's rare when you get to talk on a podcast, because we try very hard to not spoil things.
Yeah,
I've even left the room when both of them have played something and I haven't, and vice versa. We've all done it. Tim seems to care the least, maybe. I shouldn't speak for him because he's not here. But I'm really spoiler sensitive, and I think you are as well.
Yeah,
and to some extent, Tim too. Everybody hates spoilers. Let's be honest. But when it comes, but if you've played it, it's so much fun to commiserate. So
yeah,
I hope you guys enjoyed this.
Hopefully you enjoyed it. Let us know again.
And what other games maybe that come out that you'd want. You know, we really need to get people connected to the podcast some more. And I think on the next podcast that we do, which will be next week, we're going to have sort of email and comment stuff set up so that we can start to get some more feedback from the audience and sort of hear what you want to hear more of, and see if we can get that done. Tell us you like spoiler cast, you know?
Yeah, because we'd love to do more of them, because these were a lot of fun.
Awesome.
And we'll hopefully be getting more, because again, we know you're out there. We know we've got more listeners than we thought.
We have, yeah. The feed downloads keep going up every month, to the extent where, you know, we have, you know, a legitimate base now, and this is really great. And thank you to everybody for listening and supporting the show. Just by downloading it has been great.
Yeah,
we'd love your comments too. If you want to comment,
yeah, please do.
Tell
it would
us
really
what you
be
think
cool
on iTunes. And,
To say the we're going to keep doing regular episodes every other week, and we've already got another special edition lined up.
This is going to be really great. Yeah, You want to tell you
about
it?
Yeah, there's a professor here at NC State who his research is in communication, and he's been researching both pro video gaming in the Halo circuit and the effects of that it has in socialization, as well as MMORPGs and the socialization effects of there. He's gone around.
I'm really interested
stuff.
In that. I think that's fascinating because I actually steer clear of those because I know the massive impact it'll have on my life.
Yeah.
You know, and just but yet I miss out on being mired in that whole subculture.
And I'm interested because I've done our MMORPGs before. Like I've played Warcraft a couple of times.
Sure.
But I've never been grabbed that same way. And so I'm interested. And he seems like a really cool guy. I talked to him for another project. And so it should be fun. And we should have that coming up after
weeks.
This one. Yeah.
Yeah. After Thanksgiving, hopefully, right?
Yeah.
Or a couple weeks after Thanksgiving, we should have that to you.
And so
we're going to have more of these special editions. And if you have any topics that you'd like to see covered, like leave us a comment on iTunes or on our website, thejoyofgaming.com. And I guess that's it for the Joy of Gaming podcast, spoiler cast, special edition, 999 Virtue's Last Reward, Zero Escape series. My name is Rich Lepore.
And I'm Jordan Alseca.
And we'll see you real soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.